One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
We're still fighting for this title. And he's got to go to the middle for and get something. And I'll tell you, honestly, I will love it if we beat them.
Yes, everybody, welcome to another episode of The Warm Down today. Delighted to bring you European Cup winner, league winner, first black player to play for England, a legend in the game. Some career you've had, isn't it, Viv?
Old.
All right, old. Viv Anderson, everybody. Thank you, Viv. How
are
you doing?
You're welcome.
Are you well?
Yeah, good. Yeah, thanks. My ears a bit. Got to get the wax out today. It's one of those bad days. Anyway.
Right. When we got here, I said I wanted to talk about Brian Clough and I wanted to talk about Sir Alex Ferguson, but there's something that you spoke about, I think it was a couple of months ago, when you were talking about the lack of senior players, particularly at Manchester United, and compared it to when you was there in 1989 when it was all going wrong for Fergie. And actually, one of the accolades that we didn't mention there, Fergie's first ever signing as manager of Manchester United.
Myself and Brian McClure came together, but I win alphabetically.
Beautiful.
That's the way it works if anybody asks me, yeah.
So when it was going a bit west under Fergie, you mentioned senior players all got together after training one day and went and sat in the pub and sorted everything out.
Yeah, we just signed Gary Pallister, Mickey Phelan was there. We had a few senior players and I think we got beat by Norwich on the Saturday. And back in the day, Robert would say we have a team meeting. So the team meeting was, you leave your cars at home, come to training, and we get a cab into town, and we have a bit of lunch, and we sort it all out. So we did, and that after a few drinks, Robert says to me, we'll get Pally now. So we get Pally sitting between us in this pub, the other lads are on the other side, and we said, you're costing us games, you. He goes, I don't agree with that. Not for debate, you're costing us games, you've got to get your finger out. Or words to that effect. He took it on board, he wasn't happy at the time. He said, well, I don't agree with what you're saying, blah, 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 blah. But he took it on board that we were the senior players and what we said was usually right. And turned out to be a really good player in the end. So it did work, you know, sometimes, you know, when things aren't going well, you know, manager can only do a certain bit. The coaches can only do certain things. I think it has to come from the players. And I think that's where we are at Manchester United at the moment. I think we haven't got enough senior players that people are going to listen to and take on board what they've got to say and implement that on the football field.
Yeah, that was another thing that I saw in that quote that you'd mentioned previously, that it seems like we've moved on. Even the likes of Lukaku, Sanchez, Matic look like he's going. The experience has washed out of the team. It's an extremely young dressing room at the moment. How much can the manager actually do in these situations, do you think?
And it's underestimated, you know. I went to Sheffield Wednesday from there and we had Nigel Pearson, me, Nigel Worthington, you know, people. And we had young lads like David Hurst, Chris Woods in goal, Chrissy Waddle. So we had a lot of experience that knew what expected on a Saturday afternoon at 3 o'clock, you know, or whenever you got to play. So we instilled that in the younger players. You've got to do this, you've got to do that. And as going back to your question, the manager can only do a certain amount. Coaches can do a certain amount. But when things go wrong on the football field, I saw Dan Fletcher last night talking about sometimes the players on the field have to do it because it's difficult. When the manager's shouting to you, you're going, I don't know what he's got to say because I can't hear him anyway. You just go, yeah. But on the field, you go, Brian Robson's a great example. You do that, you make sure you do that, you make sure you do that. And he can do that, you know, face to face on a football field. And sometimes the players have to take responsibility and do that themselves. I don't see enough of them doing that at Manchester United at this moment in time, which is really important, especially when you've got so many young kids, you know. Greenwoods and Rashford's now, 24? And he's captain the other night.
22.
22, captain, you know. He's got nowhere near much experience. But the other people around him, you know, the Lindelofs and the goalkeeper, people like that. And it does help that the people I've talked about are all English, you know. You've got a Spanish goalkeeper, who I don't know if he talks that much English, you know. And you've got a Swede at centre-back and all the different, you know. So it's difficult, I know. But you've got to get as many, for me, you've got to get as many senior players. And a nice blend between senior players and young players is the ideal mix, I think. I think Leicester's got a bit like that. You know, they've got a few younger players, but you've got the centre-back, you've got the goalkeeper. Didn't realise the goalkeeper was 33, 34. You've got Vardy up front,
who's 34. Is Kasper that old?
33, yeah. So, yeah, so, and you've got Vardy up front. You've got a bit of experience with a bit of youth involved, and I think ours is a lot of youth and not too much experience.
What tangible benefits is there for experience on the football pitch? Because obviously you played with Brian Robson, who I think is most people's archetype of what a football captain's meant to be. What sort of things is Robbo saying to you on the, or is he more of a lead by example, or is he?
He would say, when you get a ball off the goalkeeper and you're looking to play a ball into midfield and it's tight, he'll be one of those who say, you give it me. If I lose it, it's down to me, but you give it me. So he gives you the confidence to go and play balls that you wouldn't normally play. You'd probably go, oh, I won't play that one. I'll play that one there because it's easier ball for me to play and it's not as risky and all the rest of it. That's what experienced players do. Matic does that to a certain degree. You know, he's had his fallouts. He's come back in the team. And when he's come back in the second half, especially yesterday, I thought he did excellent. He took the ball, taking the ball in areas where younger players will go, oh, it's a bit tight in there. I'm not so sure about that. And that's where, you know, the Glenn Hoddles, where I played with Glenn Hoddle. Glenn Hoddle was, if it was really tight, he'd say, give it me, because I'm confident in my own ability. And if you give it him three times, you lose it three times, you're not going to do it the fourth time. But you give it him three times and he does what he says he's going to do, you take that on board and you give it him more often, and he's more creative than you'll ever be. So I think that's why experienced players are really, really needed, especially at growing, emerging football clubs. You know, it's really important for me.
Right, you've played under two of the greatest managers that I've ever walked up and down a touchline. Yeah. I think that's fair to say.
Well, if you come from Nottingham, yeah, I would have thought so, yeah.
What was the difference and what was the similarities between Brian Clough and Sir Alex?
What's the difference? They're very, very similar in many respects. I must have been asked this, and I've obviously had a pound every time I've asked this question. What I'd say, they're very similar in many respects. They demand respect from the players, and they get respect from the players. They play football in the same way, you know, they play and move, and you be creative as much as you can, give you a license to do what you want, but you've got to entertain, which is great. And people say to me, who would you choose between the two? And I go, it's a really difficult decision, that, because so what Sir Alex has done for 27 years, or however long he was at Man United for, is will never be beaten. I just go back to Cluffy. We used to train, we used to go down the training field, and we used to have to get the cows off the training field. That's how primitive it was. So to get a club like Nottingham Forest, remember it's only for 5 years, Fergie's done it for 27 years, to get them to win back-to-back European Cups has got to be an unbelievable task. And to get the players together, which he did with him and Peter Taylor, I'd just say, if I had to choose, I'd say Brian Clough by just a gnat's. But if Sir Alex is watching, I'd say him.
From what I've seen, yeah, it shone extremely bright, and then it looked like that team got picked apart a little bit, unfortunately. But winning back-to-back European Cups, winning back-to-back league titles, and it was from a pretty unfancied team at the time. It wasn't like Nottingham Forest had traditionally done that.
No, I mean, average crowd of 19,000.
Wow.
You know, so, you know, it's a... What they did, what we did at that time, is it will not be surpassed. And remember, everybody seems to forget about that. Prior to Arsenal's Invincibles, we had the record to over two seasons. We were half for one season and half for another season, undefeated. So Arsenal just beat our record, I don't know how many years ago it was, but we thought at the time that'd never be beaten. Now, Arsenal's record is still living today, and you've still got Liverpool down the corner, as we speak today, could beat that or equal it or better it. We hope it doesn't happen, obviously, being Reds, but, you know, there is a possibility.
There is a legit possibility. The fact that we're the only team that's taken points off them this season's kind of terrifying, isn't it?
And it is.
They've not even been as good, I don't think, as it was last season.
And they lost once last year and lost a league. So, you know, it's interesting it's interesting times for everybody connected, I would have thought.
European Cup then, in the late 70s, and making your England debut at around about the same time.
Yeah.
What sort of cultural impact do you think that did with you being the first black player? Because I can't imagine there's many black players across Europe full stop.
There wasn't many at the time. There was a bit of debate between myself and Laurie who was going to be the first black player to play. God rest his soul, he was the first under 21 black international, and there was always debate whether it's going to be me. And we shared a room together in one of the England games. I think it was Sofia away, playing Bulgaria, and he's saying, what do you think? I says, if it's you, it's you. If it's me, it's me. It was never really it's got to be me, it's got to be you. It was just friendly, a bit of banter. We're looking at car magazines more than anything else. But luckily enough, it was me. And obviously, it was a big thing at the time. And, you know, even now, you know, it gets brought up all the time. If I go to London, people will say hello. So, yes, I'm very privileged and proud to be the first black player, full international. And, it was a big thing at the time. And moving on now, it's you look at the England side or the England setup, there's lots of black faces, which is great.
Yeah, I think it represents the society that we're in.
Yeah, of course, yeah. Yeah, 2020, yeah, it does replicate. You know, there must be at least 7 or 8, 9 black faces in that, you know, when there was only myself, Laurie, and then Cyril came along. There wasn't many after that.
Do you think prior to you breaking through and becoming the first black player, there was any sort of prejudice in team selection? Or do you think it was just more of a case of...
I would hope not. Having worked with Bobby Robson and Ron Greenwood beforehand, who were my managers at the time, they were football men, you know. So if you had the ability, it's like Cluffy. If you had the ability, no matter what colour your skin was, you were playing. I always remember going to, we played Newcastle away. It was one of my second or third game, and went out on the pitch and got so much abuse. Came back in. This is before the game. I go back in, I say, oh, Mr. Clough, I said, I don't think I can play today. He goes, you're playing. End of. So I go, well, I've got no choice then, really. So I had to go out and play, you know. So luckily enough, I had a manager at the time. Else, we wouldn't have this conversation. I'd be working in Sainsbury's or somewhere like that. So luckily enough, he was around at the time and gave me the guidance too. And he said afterwards, he says, I think we got beat in the game anyway because we were 2-0 at McDonald. You know, up there was a very, very emotional place to go and play, and the supporters were very, very, euphoric in the Newcastle area. So to go there, we got beat, but he pulls me afterwards and says, you did okay tonight. He said, but if you're going to let people like these who you were playing against, not to the players, but the supporters, dictate to you, you're never going to make a career. So I went, I want to be a footballer, so I took that on board, and it never really bothered me after that.
That literally was going to be my next question. Yeah. Does it get through, or are you able to brush it off?
It depends if you go and play Tranmere on a cold, wet Wednesday night when there's only 2,000 people, you'll hear all the comments. But when you're playing in front of 60, 70, 50,000, you know, it's very difficult to hear individual comments unless it's a collective, and it doesn't really happen that often. But it's one of those where... it's one of those, you just got to get on with it. I played in the area, we had to get on with it. There's no alternative. You get on with it and you play and play to your best ability. And hopefully you get picked the next week for the manager. And you did well for the manager, you did well for the football club. And there was no issue about walking off fields and getting upset because what they're saying or shouting or whatever it may be. It was an area where you had to get on with it. And if you didn't get on with it, you wouldn't make a career.
Do you think that the racism with players and certainly prejudice in selection was eradicated on the basis of, like, you can look at one player and you can look at another player and you go, well, he's better, I'm just going to play him. But do you think it exists as it apparently exists with managers, because we don't actually know how to rank the ability of a manager as much as we know how to rank the ability of a player?
I remember when you talk about that Great Forest team, I think we only used 15 players all season. You know, so it was, you'd play and play until the manager thought, I could do with a rest now, he'd take you out, you know. So it was one that you didn't have a squad of 26 where you could choose from and rest or, you know, whatever it may be. It was a matter of 15 players. He thinks the best 11 plays most weeks until they got tired and you could see them physically tired. Then you pick one of the squad players in. So it's a completely different thought process as a manager then as it is now.
Do you think football's better or worse for the massive squads and squad rotation? Do you think the starting 11, just consistent 11 until someone was injured, was a good thing or a bad thing?
I'm going to say it was a good thing. I always remember myself and Tony Woodcock playing for England at the end of the season, and I think we played 70-odd games. Then we played Sweden away, in a friendly it was, in Sweden, at the end of the season, and we played for England on the day. We both got in the bath and went like that. I just can't move. I can't even talk. I can't even do anything. So it's one of those, we're just used to getting on with playing week in, week out. We didn't train to a great deal because we were playing games all the time. So, and the only time you're ever judged is when you're playing games, not when you're in training and how good you are in training. It's about playing football matches and winning football matches. That's why that successful Forest team, as I said, the Invincibles, match the Invisibles. We used to come in, we'd come in the Monday morning and go, the coach would say, what do you want to do today? We say, well, we'll have a five-a-side. They go, all right, then, do what you want. And we did that week in, week out, day in, day out, because they knew, the management team knew, on a Saturday afternoon or on a Wednesday, on a Thursday, or whenever we had to play, they knew what they would get out of us. If they didn't know what they were going to get out of us, we'd be doing set drills, we'd be doing this, that, the other. We never worked on a set piece, ever, Forrest, never. It was one of those, you're good enough to play, you play, and that's it. So it's a completely different world for what we're talking about now.
Right. I had Alex Stepney on a couple of months ago, and we were talking about both training and tactics.
Right.
And he told me, Sir Matt Busby's tactics ahead of the 68 Cup final consisted of this. Nobby, you're marking Eusebio.
Right.
And that was it. And you're like, wait, what? Because yeah. Like, that's the equivalent of Cristiano Ronaldo. World Player of the Year, absolute phenom.
Yeah. And he knew Nobby would do a job on him.
And he told him in a tunnel. He told him in the tunnel as he was waiting to walk out, oh, by the way, you're marking Eusebio. And you're like, what?
Yeah.
And then I hear yourself talking about, oh, yeah, we just played five-a-side. And you're just like, how do you win back-to-back European Cups and back-to-back titles? And it sounds less organised than anyone's school team.
I tell you a great story. European Cup final in Madrid, first one. It's the first one, anyway.
Not many people can say the first.
Well, anyway, right. So we go to say the games on the Wednesday. We get there on the Monday. Training ground outside Madrid. We get the training ground, and first training session, no balls. No balls. He said, "There's a dartboard, chess, dominoes."
Is this a Cluffy thing?
Yeah. No footballs.
Deliberate.
So get to Wednesday, the day of the game. We've not touched a football since a Saturday. And Peter Shilton was adamant, he's got to touch a football. He's got to feel the football. So he says, for you, young man, I'll make an exception. So he got him a couple of balls from where? Maybe the village next door, don't know where, with the coach. And I remember my mate, I saw him afterwards, there wasn't mobile phones in them days. They saw Peter Shilton on an island. So he went out, got the coach went out, got the boulders off this island and a piece of grass and knocking balls at Peter Shilton. So my mate's going around the island with his mates going to the game. And he sees Peter Shilton going like this, going like this. And he only tells me afterwards because, as I said, no mobile phones. But that was the case. He was the only one that touched a ball in that European Cup final. It was one of those, you go out and play and that's it.
So was that trying to get you to relax, do you think?
Yeah, I think it was, yeah. It backfired because we played Wolves in the... we're going to Cluffy stories again. We played Wolves in the Milk Cup final.
I'm all about
where,
in a minute.
Where Andy Gray knocks down Peter Shilton or clashes with Peter Shilton. The ball bops down, he knocks in the net, 1-0, we get beat by Wolves. The night before, we'd gone to bed, Archie Gemmell, all the senior players, everybody's gone to bed. And we had a room at the Royal Lancaster, and the manager says to the coach, Jimmy Gordon, get everybody down. This is 9:30 at night. Most of them gone to bed. We get a phone call. Manager wants everybody down in the room. We had a private room, so we had dinner. And we're going, why? He says, the manager wants everybody down. So everybody comes down, Archie Kemmel goes, what are we doing here? So we come down, sit around the tables. Next thing, the door opens, there's a crate of champagne, there's a crate of orange juice, comes in. I go, what's going on here? He goes, nobody leaves this room till they tell me a joke. So we had to individually tell a joke, and if he liked it, you could go to bed. I got to bed at 12 o'clock and woke up against Wolves with a bit of a frizzy head, thinking, I've got to play a cup final here today, you know. And we get beat 1-0. So it didn't always work, but it was his way of relaxing. Have a glass of champagne and tell a joke and, you know, don't think about what's happening tomorrow.
Do you remember any of his team talks prior to the finals?
Finals, no. I always remember he'd always come in late and he'd get the football up. Not always do this, but he'd get the football, you, give it to him, because he can play better than you. Simple. And then he'd walk out.
That was it?
That was it. You play the ball, give the ball to people who can play, and then walk out. You wouldn't see him all week, and that's all he'd say. But he earned his money on the coaching side, who to take off, who to cajole, he'd be one of those. He'd earn his money then. He wasn't one for training and all the rest. He'd leave other people to do all that.
Do you think that Nottingham Forest side gets brushed over because football was in a dark age, but probably on and off the pitch, really? It's not quite the golden era of the 60s with your World Cup and United winning European Cups and stuff.
Yeah.
And it wasn't quite the Premier League era, which is all blasted all over every TV station. Yeah. Those late 70s and mid 80s just seems to just...
You look at that Liverpool team, it was a great team, you know. You know, we beat them in the first round. We'd get them in the first round. No, and they never talked about it, no. You look at the Terry McDermotts and the Kevin Keegans and all the great players, Phil Neals and all them, you know, some fantastic, Alan Hansen, all them. Fantastic players, I agree. Maybe it was a bit washed over, but you go to these areas, you go to Liverpool, they still talk about They talk about all the Dalglish and Rush and all the rest of them. And Nottingham now, we go back, now it's like 40-odd years since, and we go back and we did something at the ground the other week. There was thousands of people there, you know. So we all remembered in those where we did our stuff in the first place. But as I say, I go down to London from time to time and people always mention the Forest team and things like that. So it's good.
Did you think Sir Alex was going to get it right when you was at United? Was there anything that you had certainty of?
The only reason I ever went is because of his passion and I knew that he would get it right. Yeah. I came to Man United as a schoolboy, obviously, they said I wasn't going to make it at Man United, so I went back, got a job for about 5 weeks, and then
job?
I was a silk screen printer, which means I was a glorified tea boy. Used to get a tea at lunchtime and sandwiches and stuff like that. I was a runner, really. And then Foy said, come and play for our youth team. Played for the youth team twice, permission off work to go and play in the youth team twice, and then Man United said, we'll sign you. So I became apprentice. Foy said, I'll sign you, become apprentice then. And I'm from there, really.
Brilliant. What do you think Ollie needs to do currently? Or do you think he's capable of doing?
And there's a lot of work. I understand where he's coming from with the younger lads and nurturing the young lads as much as you can. You know, Greenwood's been a success. I think Rashford's playing really well now. You know, so I think the left-back's really good. Williams. So he just needs a bit more experience, I think. And I think in this transfer window, it's very, very difficult to get the players you want because the big clubs don't want to sell the good players. So the only way you're going to get better players that's going to better benefit the football club is in the summer, unless you're going to go to a Leicester and offer silly money for the likes of Madison's, which I've been rumoured to hear about. So, and if I was Leicester, there's no way you're getting Madison in this transfer window. You're going to have to wait till the summer if he's available. I wouldn't make him available because he's one of the young ones that's going to do really well for them. So it's very difficult to pick and choose, you know, where you're going to get better players in this transfer window, because notoriously this this January transfer window is always difficult to get players.
Do you think it's a case of simply needing better players, or do you think there's more Ollie could be doing coaching wise as well?
Well, he can see the players and watch the players, you know, and say, you've got to put them in because, you know, they're better than what we've got. And some of the younger lads are, you know. It's a fine balance, you know. It's a fine balance, you know, with, experience. And, you know, you look at, I didn't realise Martial's only 24. He's the youngest ever teenager, most expensive youngest teenager at 19. 30-odd million. I didn't realise. He seemed to have been around for a long while, you know. You know, and you've got Jesse. How old is Jesse now?
27.
27. You've got Marcus, really youngish. You've got the left-back, really young. You've got Jones, who's really young. You've got midfield players.
Jones ain't that young no more. He's been here 10 years.
Yeah, not that Jones. The other Jones I'm talking about. Sorry, I meant the right-winger. What's the right-winger called?
James.
James, sorry. I meant him. A lot of young players.
Yeah, Wan-Bissaka, young lad as well.
Yeah, there's a lot of young players in that team and they need a bit of guidance. You know, I went from Man United to Sheffield Wednesday because Ron Atkinson knew I'd been experienced, been around, and he knew he had some younger lads that was half decent, like the David Ursulies was, you know, that need a bit of guidance and a bit of what's right, what's wrong, and things like that. And I don't think Man United's got enough of them.
Yeah, I think when you hear the stories of when Memphis was at the club, turning up in a Bentley dressed like a fucking matador, yeah, and Rooney ripped strips off him,
yeah.
And you go, okay, if someone turned up dressed like a matador today in an orange Bentley,
nobody blink an eyelid. Yeah. Imagine that under Roy. Imagine that under Brian Robson. You just wouldn't get away with stuff.
You never
stuff
played
like
with Roy, did you?
No, I never played with Roy. No, no.
Totally dovetailed each other. Yeah.
But I know Roy really well. Because obviously played with Forrest, and we met with half pass of course. We all live around here anyway, so I've seen from time to time. You just wouldn't get away with stuff like that, you know. You know, that's where the manager has no say in it. You know, the captain would say, "Hey, you see you in that car again, you'll know you get the wrath of everybody."
Seriously, that's how
yeah, that's right, yeah. It used to happen all the time.
Someone turns don't up be coming fancy
that, don't be coming that again. One of those, yeah.
Really, yeah?
Yeah. Wow. And they take it on board because you were the captain, you're the senior player, you listen to what they've got to say.
Madness.
Yeah.
On that note, Viv, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Do you want to tell us a little bit about what Play On Pro is?
Play On Pro is about ex-players, not just footballers, but we've got golfers, cricketers, you know, tennis players, we've got badminton players, men and women, a girl called Gail Ems, you know, we're trying to look after them post-retirement, really. We're trying to get them work. We've got an app for them where we create opportunities for them. They can speak to one another. It's invitation only. No disrespect to people who've played at Rochdale, but we've talked about you've got to play in the Premiership or Championship, first-class cricket, obviously, and things like that. So we've got over 500 now, ambassadors, we call them, and we try to keep them. You know, when you finish, you wait for the phone to ring. The phone never rings. You go, what do I do? You know, we're trying to help them on that path to the next phase of their lives, really. And we've been going about 3 years now, and hopefully they gain some stuff from it, hopefully.
Brilliant. There's some right names on it.
Yeah, they are.
And some actually,
but
not all finished as well, actually.
No, we've got Winks, we've got Grealish, we've got people like that who's still playing, yeah. Yeah, that's on our app, yeah. So we're able to grow the ambassadors. We're over 500. We're trying to get that to 1,000 this time next year. So we're growing and we're trying to get them work, you know. Chris Gale there, so he's a good lad. So, you know, we're trying to get them work and give them some sort of purpose in life. If they want to go on courses and stuff like that, we're trying to help them in that respect. So in all aspects of their life, we're trying to help them and give them something. So there's a great example. There's a lad called Steve Hodge and Kevin Gallen. They played together at QPR over 20-odd years ago. They both came on the app, very similar time. Hadn't spoke to each other for 20-odd years. Right. So they text one another, you know. So it's getting that camaraderie back, getting that synergy back they had all those years ago, and speaking to mates you'd never spoke to for years. Once you finish, it's one of those. One was in the other day, one of the ex-players. So how many ex-colleagues have you got on your phone? You went four. You know, they lose track, they move clubs, get new friends, and they never stick with anybody. So this is a place where they can come and speak to one another, hopefully get them work. And we do tours. We took them away to Hong Kong for the last 3 years. We picked a team. We didn't do particularly well, but the opportunity to go and play and do things they did all those years ago.
Nice, brilliant. Yeah. Right, this is brought to you guys by The Athletic, which is a new home of football writing. They've got an outrageous team, especially on United as well. If you're interested in checking out, you get a month's free trial and 50% off all of your stuff. Link is in the description, and it's theathletic.co.uk/Howson if you're into it. I'll throw a link to this in the description as well in case you want to come and check out what Play On Pro are up to. But like I said, thank you very much, Bib. We'll see you in the next one.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th. So get your tickets now at kosai.org.